You're listening to PetLifeRadio.com.
Is your pet stressed out? Does your pet need annual vaccines? Which pet is best for a child? Would you know if your dog was in pain? Pet Life Radio presents The Pet Doctor, where you'll learn everything about keeping your pet healthy and happy. From pet care, pet meds and grooming, to pet food, pet insurance and dental care, this is the place to find out everything there is to know about pet wellness. Whether you have a dog, cat, reptile, or rabbit, you'll find answers for your pets straight from the vets, because it's your pet. Health matters. Please welcome your Pet Doctor host, veterinary media consultant and veterinarian, Dr. Bernadine Cruz.
It's happened to you and probably your pet. You go to the doctor because you're not feeling well. They look, they ask, they listen. Then inevitably, it's time to go to the lab for poking, sampling, and that all so much fun, peeing in a cup. Why do they need all those samples? Aren't they just trying to run up the bill? My guest is Dr. Leslie Willis Woods. She's a board-certified veterinary pathologist, a PhD, works for the California Animal Health and Food Safety Laboratory System, and lectures on avian toxicology in the avian pathology and avian medicine courses at our alma mater, UC Davis School of Veterinary Medicine. Today we're going to chat about keeping your pet birds safe in our homes, as well as the role of the California Animal Health and Food Safety Laboratory System, so keeping our pets, people, and environment healthy. We'll be right back after this short break.
Please have a seat in the waiting room. The doctor will be with you shortly, right after these messages.
I'm not much of a reader, but I do wish I were more well-read.
There are so many great books coming out. I wish I could find a way to keep up.
Audible.com makes it easy to stay well-informed and catch up on your reading simply by listening. Audiobooks from Audible turn downtime into uptime. You'll be more productive and become well-read.
Now I'm able to catch up on all the great books I've been wanting to read.
With Audible, I feel smarter.
Pet Life Radio listeners, try Audible.com now and get your first 30 days of Audible Listener Gold Membership plan free. And get a free audiobook. Choose from over 100,000 titles. To get this great deal, go to audibledeals.com. That's audibledeals.com.
Let's talk pets on PetLifeRadio.com. Welcome back to The Pet Doctor on Pet Life Radio with Dr. Bernadine Cruz. The doctor is in, and we'll see you now.
Dr. Willis, thank you so much for being with us today. I love that you're a classmate of mine.
It's very nice. It's my pleasure talking with you.
So you right now are lecturing on avian toxicology and pathologists. But before we get into that, tell the listeners a little bit about what a clinical pathologist does. You know, we watch CSI. So is that what a pathologist does?
Well, a comparative pathologist typically performs necropsies on animal species, which is equivalent to autopsies on people, in order to determine the cause of clinical disease and death. We look for changes in the tissues and we do necropsies that help us do that. And then we also look at microscopic sections of tissues and we look for patterns of changes, abnormal changes in the tissues that will help us tell if the animal had a viral disease, a bacterial disease, poisoning, nutritional deficiency, anything like that. And then we have the testing capabilities at the diagnostic laboratory to help us determine exactly what bacteria or what virus or what toxin. And with that information, we can relay the information to the veterinarian or the owner that submitted the animal to the diagnostic lab or the sample so that we can treat the remaining animals in the herd or the flock or prevent disease in animals that owners may obtain in the future.
So is this always going to be on a herd flock level? Because there's so many times, and it's very tragic, somebody will bring in a pet that they find deceased in their backyard, and they know that the neighbor poisoned it. That always seems to be the scenario. I know my neighbor poisoned this pet. Always is complaining that the dog is barking. Is there a way to determine something like that?
Yes, they will submit the bird or any livestock. We also work with wildlife to the diagnostic lab. The pathologist will do the testing, and we have the capabilities of testing for poisons if they do suspect a poison. But by performing necropsy and histopathology, we can tell that, oh, no, it really wasn't a poison. You know, there are changes in the tissues that look like an infectious disease. And then we can relay that information to the owner and say, well, if it looks like this infectious disease, and this is how you can treat it. And so that will allay their fears that they had their animals poisoned by the neighbors, and also it will help them to prevent the disease in the animals that are left in the herd or the flock, and also treat.
It sounds as though, I know there have been times I've looked into our local lab not sending it to your facility, and it seems to be rather pricey. So the California Animal Health and Food Safety Laboratory, they're able to take in deceased pets from a pet owner. Does it have to go through a veterinarian?
Well, it's preferable that it goes through a veterinarian, but no, we accept animals from all the public. We work on companion birds, backyard chickens, livestock, and wildlife. We don't typically do dogs and cats, but anybody can submit to the laboratory. And we're a veterinary diagnostic lab. We're part of the School of Veterinary Medicine. Our testing is subsidized by the state of California because it really helps us with disease surveillance for the state of California. So essentially, we charge one price, but we're doing thousands of dollars worth of testing for just a single case, essentially, because of the subsidized rate. And it's a capped fee, so we can run a lot of different diagnostic ancillary tests with a case, such as we can do bacterial cultures. Some of the toxicology is under the capped fee. And we can do virology in order to do a complete workup so that we know the cause of death and the exact virus or bacteria that causes death, and also produce, like, for example, an antibiotic sensitivity for a bacteria that will help them treat animals that are remaining in the flock.
This must be very exciting for you, because so many times myself, and I was talking about, clients come in with their pets and I say, all right, it's not feeling well and I need to run a complete blood cell count, a chemistry panel and your analysis, and it's going to run X dollars. And they go, do you have to run all of that? That's awfully expensive, doc. And here you are, thankfully, in a situation where your hands don't seem to be as tied and you can really investigate and figure out what's going on.
Exactly. And that's what I love about my job. We are able to carry out the diagnostic testing to the end. You know, we do have some tests that, you know, that we do charge over the capped fee. A lot of the toxicology testing is very expensive, but most of the testing we're able to do under the capped fee, and so it's very rewarding to us to be able to carry it out as far as we can so that we can determine the exact cause of the clinical disease or death.
Dr. Woods, here we have the scenario in particular talking about birds. So we have this pet bird who seemed to be in good health. Maybe I'm not the best cook in the world and I burnt a pan and all of a sudden the next day my pet bird is dead. That seems to be a fairly common scenario. What's the pathogenesis behind this? What caused it?
A lot of the pans contain, non-stick pans contain Teflon. And Teflon toxicosis is a cause of respiratory disease and is rapidly fatal in pet birds. And it occurs when the Teflon coating on the Teflon-coated pans reach high enough temperatures to undergo a pyrolysis, and it releases a toxic gas called polytetrafluoroethylene. That's very toxic to birds. Under normal cooking conditions, which is typically less than 400 degrees, the cookware is stable. But a Teflon-coated pan that's not completely filled and is left on high, or is, say, you're boiling water in it and it boils dry, that pan will reach high enough temperatures to release the toxic gases. It has to reach a temperature of 530 degrees Fahrenheit. And birds are exquisitely sensitive to these gases. And when they're exposed, they will develop respiratory distress. Sometimes they will develop incoordination and seizures, and death is typically very rapid.
So it almost sounds like the old-fashioned canary in the coal mines when all of a sudden the canary fell over dead. Oops, it was time for everybody else to get out. Why are they so susceptible to all this?
Well, birds are exquisitely sensitive to many aerosol toxins. They have unique respiratory anatomy that makes the gas exchange very efficient to provide high levels of oxygen to the muscles for flight. Their small thighs and their metabolic rate increases their susceptibility. So, you know, they are very efficient at delivering oxygen to the tissues and therefore very efficient at delivering toxins also. Much more so than other animals, including humans. That's why they use the canaries in the coal mines as an early warning system to detect dangerous gases such as methane, carbon dioxide, carbon monoxide. So if the miners saw birds in respiratory distress or if they saw a cage full of dead birds, it was an indication to them that they had to evacuate the mines because the birds were used as sentinels.
It sounds like with some of the problems they've had in the mines recently saying, oh, yes, and the scrubbers weren't working or the monitoring systems were offline, it's probably best to go the old-fashioned way, take your bird down with you and see how the bird's doing.
Yeah.
When birds get ill, I know it's one of the things that I was taught, we were both taught at veterinary school, that when you see a bird that is stressed, don't even put your hands on it right away because too many times they're just so fragile, they just fall over dead and your hand is like, oh my goodness. There are things that can be done. What's going on at the Veterinary Medical Teaching Hospital there at Davis to help protect birds and what type of advances are right now in avian medicine?
Well, at the Veterinary Medical Teaching Hospital, there are veterinarians with expertise in avian medicine, and essentially they're at the cutting edge, state-of-the-art level of avian medicine. And so they have clients who own birds that are in the area that can submit directly from the area. They're also a referral hospital for veterinarians that want a consult with a veterinarian with avian expertise.
So surgery, I know in the past, was just fraught with so many problems. Like, oh my goodness, you couldn't do surgery on birds. And I know we have a veterinarian here in my area, Southern California, who has done a successful, basically a spay in a canary, and it lived. It's like, oh my goodness, that is microsurgery. So things can be done. Just because you have a bird doesn't mean it's a disposable pet. It gets ill. There are things that can be done. It's a very good idea. Just like having a cat or a dog or a horse, getting it in for a routine wellness exam, keeping track of its weight and its nutrition. All of these things are just so important. And just because it's a bird doesn't mean it can't get some very good medical care.
Yes, it's truly amazing what they can do with very, very tiny birds now. It's truly amazing to me.
And some of those birds are very, very expensive, especially the large birds. And they live a fantastic length of time if they're given good care.
Yes, and they're part of the family.
The California Animal Health and Food Safety Laboratory System. It is responsible for surveillance and response of foreign diseases. So foot and mouth disease, for instance, I know is one that is always a concern. It was such a problem in England several years ago where so many of the cattle needed to be destroyed. That's not a disease that is a problem for people. So why is it such a problem then for animals? And why are you surveilling for it?
Well, I think foot and mouth disease, if that came into the country, it's probably our most important disease economically because that disease came in, it would severely affect trade in the U.S. And we have a very large export, so that probably is our number one disease. But there are many, many diseases that we do surveillance for, both that are foreign animal diseases and also reportable diseases that are also zoonotic, so diseases that animals can infect animals, but also people. So we're not only doing surveillance for the foreign animal diseases that would affect our livestock and our economy, but also diseases that would affect our human health in this country as well.
right now talking about human diseases, zoonotic diseases. One I think that's on everybody's mind is Ebola. Is that something that your lab is on the forefront of testing for and monitoring?
Well, we do not work with human diseases or primate diseases at this laboratory. We primarily work with livestock diseases. But we are continuing doing surveillance for the diseases, the foreign animal diseases that we recognize, and actually also emerging diseases. So we have the capabilities here with all of the various labs, the virology lab that can do virus isolation. We have electron microscopy that we have an open view to look at, you know, samples, to determine if they're a virus, and lots of other labs that can do some testing to look for emerging diseases, new emerging diseases, as well as the diseases that we know about.
It is exciting, and I mean such a necessary behind-the-scenes type of a job that you have that's helping the veterinarian that's on, you know, the front line. So thank you, Dr. Woods. I appreciate that. I'm speaking right now with Dr. Leslie Woods. She is a diplomate of the American College of Veterinary Pathologists and a PhD in comparative pathology and presently a professor at UC Davis School of Veterinary Medicine. We'll be right back after this short break talking a little bit about more of the things that she does to keep people, animals, and California as well as the world safe. We'll be right back.
Please have a seat in the waiting room. The doctor will be with you shortly. Right after these messages.
Hi, this is Tim Link, animal communicator and pet expert, and host of Animal Rights on Pet Life Radio. Have you ever wanted to know what your pet is really thinking? Do you want to find out if they truly understand what you're trying to tell them? Ever wish you could build a better understanding and closer relationship with your pet? Well, now you can. Learning to communicate with animals is a four-part on-demand workshop. In the workshop, you'll learn the essential techniques that are necessary to communicate with animals, including what is animal communication, breathing correctly to achieve the perfect state to communicate with your animals at a deeper level, using guided meditation exercises and method to communicate with animals, and how to send and receive information from your animals. So if you're wanting to learn how to communicate and connect with your animals at a deeper level, visit PetLifeRadio.com/workshop and purchase and download Learning to Communicate with Animals. You'll be glad you did.
Welcome to Bird's Eye View on Pet Life Radio. I am Dr. Lori Hess, here with Dr. Michelle Ravish, and we are both bird and exotic animal veterinarians. We work at the Veterinary Center for Birds and Exotics, an all bird and exotic pet hospital in Bedford Hills, New York. And this is a show all about birds. It's a Bird's Eye View, and we hope you'll tune in soon.
Every week, on demand, only on PetLifeRadio.com.
Let's talk pets. On Pet Life Radio.
Pet Life Radio.
PetLifeRadio.com.
Welcome back to The Pet Doctor on Pet Life Radio with Dr. Bernadine Cruz. The doctor is in and we'll see you now.
Dr. Woods, thank you again so much for being with us. You were talking about these various diseases and sometimes emerging diseases, diseases that are brought in, oftentimes inadvertently, to the United States. Exotic Newcastle disease, that was a real problem several years ago. Is it still a problem in California and throughout the United States? And what is it?
It is considered a foreign animal disease. It's currently not in this country. We did have an outbreak of exotic Newcastle disease in the early 2000s, and essentially it is a paramyxovirus that causes very high mortality in poultry. And, you know, the disease can be carried in by smuggled birds, smuggled parrots, smuggled poultry, because there is exotic Newcastle disease in other countries to the south. And so we test most of our birds. We just do a surveillance for exotic Newcastle disease. Avian influenza was also very highly publicized not too long ago, and we also test all of our birds, our poultry, for avian influenza. And that's a constant surveillance that we do. Avian influenza can cause disease in humans. So we're not only protecting the poultry industry of California, but also our human health.
Now, is this the same bird flu that we keep hearing about in China, where they're just having to destroy thousands upon thousands of birds?
You know, we're doing the surveillance in order to prevent the emergence of that coming into the country. And so, yes, we do test for the influenza, and as soon as we get a positive test, essentially we do it by PCR, and then as soon as we get a positive, then we'll sequence it and we'll compare it to the various strains of influenza in different parts of the world and determine if it's the human pathogenic influenza or not. The influenza can change on us very rapidly, and when we see certain strains of influenza, we're very aware that they can mutate very rapidly and can become a problem.
Sounds like just our regular flu that you and I get every year. You get your flu vaccine and hope that what they've put in that vaccine will protect you against that year's particular strain.
Yes, exactly. Yes.
So your laboratory also, I know it's involved in protecting animals and people from diseases, the zoonotic diseases, I should say. And West Nile is one of those. That affects horses and people, correct?
Yes.
And you can explain a little bit. I love the story because, if I remember correctly, it was a veterinary pathologist at the Bronx Zoo back in 1999 who first suspected when there was an outbreak of an influenza-type disease there in Manhattan, New York area, and then started noticing that many of her own birds in the collection at the zoo started to die, that there was a relationship. And when she brought it to officials' knowledge, attention, they said, oh, you're really cute. You're only a veterinarian. Please go away. You don't know what you're talking about. Explain the story a little bit, I wish.
Yes, she had necropsied birds at the zoo. They were corvids or crows that were free-ranging that were dying on the zoo property. And she performed the necropsies and found an encephalitis, a myocarditis. And she...
So a disease that was affecting the brain and the heart.
Yes, And she tried to convince the folks that essentially this is different, this is new. And the corvids are actually a warning for the disease in people because soon after, encephalitis started in people exposed to West Nile virus and then also causes encephalitis in horses. And, you know, the whole development of the story as the disease worked its way across the United States essentially gave us a way to do surveillance for West Nile virus in order to protect the human population. We did surveillance in our corvids because they're the most susceptible and the first to die from West Nile virus. And it gave us an early warning system that in that area, West Nile virus is present. We also had mosquito populations that were already in place in California to do serological surveillance looking for Western and equine encephalitis, St. Louis encephalitis, that the vector-borne disease lab was testing in order to determine if those diseases are present. And we just added the West Nile virus testing to our sentinel chickens and tested the mosquitoes to see if the West Nile virus was present and would be a danger to the people. And then that prompted management for the vector control districts to do the spraying for mosquitoes to prevent infection in people.
So you really are, being a veterinarian, taking care of human health.
Yeah, yes.
Yes.
I have an example of also cases that we did that are very exciting. We also do wildlife, and we, a couple years ago, found that a threatened species, the Pacific fisher, was dying of rodenticide poisoning, and working with integral ecology research biologists and California Department of Fish and Wildlife, we determined that essentially they were being poisoned by poisons that were left out to protect the marijuana plants on illegal grow sites on our public lands in California. And with that information, since that time, with that information, the California Department of Fish and Wildlife and law enforcement and other nonprofit organizations are taking action to try to clean up those sites. So essentially wildlife pathology not only protects the wildlife, but also people and the environment. So it's been very exciting time working in this field.
It definitely sounds like it. And I know there's so much that you're getting involved with of wildlife, people smuggling in or buying a very inexpensive bird, going, oh, wow, what a deal. I went to the swap meet and found this great parrot that I know I went to a pet store would cost me $500. Here it was $150. Very likely it was smuggled in, and there's always that chance that he could bring in diseases like the Newcastle disease and spread it to the animals here. You have a small little chicken farm in your couple of chickens in your backyard, and there's always that chance there of spreading diseases to other animals and really impacting human health as well as the economic health of your particular area. But I know you're also involved, and I'm not sure if you are, that the California Animal Health and Food Safety Lab was involved in testing seafood from Mexico. What was that all about?
Seafood from Mexico.
You weren't involved in that?
Yes. No. No.
You can only do so many things, Dr. Willis. That's quite all right. Totally understandable. Mm-hmm. When you're talking about environmental health right now, we're not having, thankfully, lots of mosquitoes here in California because, unfortunately, we're having such a drought season. But drought in and of itself was causing some issues for animals. What happened there?
Well, with the drought, we're seeing a number of cases of blue-green algae poisoning because the conditions are just right for an algal bloom. The algae, the blue-green algae, will produce some very toxic products that can cause severe, acute, and fatal liver damage, or they produce neurotoxins. We are seeing blue-green algae poisoning in our pets. We're seeing it in our dogs as well as livestock, possibly in wildlife, and also some of the ponds or lakes that people swim in.
Does it affect people as it affects animals?
Oh, yes. Yes, it pretty much does the same thing. Uh-huh. And so the toxicology lab currently is doing a lot of testing for those blue-green algae toxins in order to provide the information so that they can close down and put up warning signs to prevent human illness or death even due to these blue-green algae toxins.
So it's not just here in California, it's throughout the United States, probably worldwide, I would presume, if the conditions are right. What does it look like? I have a dog and I'm going to be taking it out camping. And we see this lake and going, sure, go for it, go swimming. What do I look for?
Well, the blue-green algae, it's usually on the leeward side of a pond or a lake, and it's kind of a green scum that's on the surface of the water. And, you know, essentially that is the algae, the blue-green algae. It's really a cyanobacterium. You know, if you see that, you know, then definitely keep your animals and stay out of the water. If you happen upon it up at a lake and you want it tested, you can just scoop some of the top algae out and bring it into the laboratory, and we can look at it and test it to see if it is blue-green algae and if they are producing the toxins.
So the signs you would see is either sudden death or could be neurological problems, weakness, a kind of wobbly on their feet?
And they can die very rapidly.
Mm. Devastating.
The neurotoxin is called anatoxin, and the toxin produced by the blue-green algae that causes the liver failure is called microcystin.
Any treatment for this? Thankfully, I have not run into a case of it.
Actually, no. There is no antidote to those toxins.
How devastating. You just wanted to have a good time with your pet. You were taking your horse out for a jaunt through the woodland, and all of a sudden you have a deceased pet. That's horrid.
Yes, uh-huh. And we're seeing it in places that we've not seen it before. We had one case in a dog in the Eel River up in Northern California, that's our pristine river. It was very surprising to me.
Other things that are affecting the wildlife that I know have been causing some controversy recently, lead poisoning, and I know in California they're trying to take away all lead in ammunition, because the ammunition is being used for hunting or just target practice. Then an animal comes along and ingest it. Then a raptor or another animal comes along and ingest it. And you have this cascade of one animal affecting another and the devastating problems that can go on with lead poisoning. Have you seen much of that? Is it a real problem, do you think?
Yes, I do. In fact, I did the histopath on a number of the cases that were done in that study. And the California condor is a real problem in the California condor. Also, any of the scavengers, the turkey vultures, you know, any of the animals that are like eating a carcass that was left out that, you know, had been shot with lead. And, you know, it can cause lead poisoning. You know, target practice also, even folks with backyard chickens. Let's go to the backyard chickens. The backyard chickens have really exploded lately. There's a huge percentage of people that have backyard chickens, and they're typically free-range chickens, and there is a possibility that there's lead shot in the yard, and the chickens are taking up the lead. We have diagnosed lead poisoning in the chickens. Another issue is those chickens are depositing lead in the eggs, too.
I was going to ask, is that a problem then if somebody then eats those eggs, of them being exposed to this higher concentration of lead, what is going to cause problems for them?
Yes. In fact, we have detected levels of lead in the eggs that are above the maximum level for children to prevent that cause the neurologic disease in children. So yes, it is a problem, and so folks should be very aware of what's in the backyard, whether it's old paint or was a place that has some lead left over from target practice or whatever, and make sure that their chickens are not exposed if they are range chickens.
You're trying to do something healthy for your family by having your own chickens in the backyard, and inadvertently you can be making them ill. Dr. Willis, this has really been interesting. Thank you so much. Thank you also for your involvement in trying to keep animals and people safe. So many people don't realize that the breadth of veterinary medicine extends to jobs such as you have in your career and your passion. So thank you for that.
Oh, you're welcome, and it's been a real pleasure.
Good. This is Dr. Bernadine Cruz. I've been talking to Dr. Willis Woods. She is a veterinarian here in California. Thank you very much for listening. Please tune in again next week. We'll have more information on how to make you the best possible pet owner. Thanks for listening. Take care.
Pets can be a wonderful addition to your life because they're a member of the family. Keeping them healthy and happy is important. Pet Life Radio presents The Pet Doctor with veterinary media consultant and veterinarian Dr. Bernadine Cruz. Whether you have a dog, cat, reptile, or rabbit, you'll find answers for your pets straight from the vets. The Pet Doctor, on demand every week, only on PetLifeRadio.com.